Welcome to Glassbreakers Cafe, the podcast where we meet with impactful leaders to get their wisdom and insight on the future, leadership, and career development. Our goal is to inspire you and empower you to live an unlimited and smart future by breaking free from limiting beliefs, firefighting, and the invisible walls of our society. I'm your host, Cindy Mongeni, Future of Work expert, diversity accelerator, executive coach, and international speaker. Welcome to Glassbreakers Cafe, the podcast where we meet with impactful leaders to get their wisdom and insight on the future, inclusive leadership, and career development. Our special guest today is Baldwin English, External Affairs Manager at FPL, Florida Power Light. Welcome, Baldwin, and thanks a lot for spending this time with us today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me, Cindy. I'm happy to be here and have this conversation with you.
So to start, let's get to know you better. Could you please share your role and main responsibilities as External Affairs Manager at FPL, please?
Sure. So I'm the External Affairs Manager here at FPL in Miami-Dade County. I'm one of four of us. I handle the area primarily in the southern portion of the county. The way I view my role is kind of three-part, right? I am the primary contact for all of the elected officials from the cities in that area, as well as for the county commissioners whose territories overlap those cities as well. You know, I look at myself as a glorified customer service representative, right? So any issues that they may have, they shouldn't pick up a 1-800 number and call FPL. They can call me directly on my cell phone, whether it be a light that may be out or whether we have to negotiate through a contract or some type of a issue that is probably more significant than just the light being out. I am that person that is the face of FPL for those elected officials. Beyond that, we engage in the business community through chambers of commerce and other business associations where we met. And we also like to engage and keep our finger on the pulse of what's happening in our nonprofit world as well. So I do sit on various boards of nonprofits and we support them financially and through other means that we have at our disposal.
Fantastic. And what is interesting about your career, Baldwin, is you studied as a lawyer, a field which is still challenging for diverse talent to make it to the top. And you are not coming from a family of lawyers or wealthy family. So why did you choose this career path when you started your career as a lawyer?
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. You talked about my background there a little bit, and my parents are from Jamaica. My father came over here in high school or towards the end of his high school career. He's a pastry chef, retired as a pastry chef after many, many decades in that industry. My mother was a secretary, but it's administrative assistant. And, you know, she wrote in shorthand and all of that. She was the ideal person for those roles that she held in both in New York and here with the county of Miami-Dade County, where she worked for probably over 25 years at the county level here. And I do recall being a young person in New York, as a matter of fact, and some days you'd have schools, you know, days where school was out and you had to go to work with your parents or stay home. And I do remember having to go from Brooklyn into Manhattan with my mother on occasion and just being in awe of the tall buildings and the people in suits wearing, carrying briefcases. And I just remember thinking to myself, man, it looks so cool. Like, it looks so important. I kind of want to be that guy. And so when we moved to South Florida, to Miami, I was going into third grade, I was the only kid in my class in third and fourth grade. I didn't carry a book bag, I carried a briefcase, right? Because I wanted to emulate what I saw And that's where I saw myself going. So years later, it was interesting. I kind of lost track of that dream, partly because I don't think I was in an area where I was surrounded by people that were lawyers. I didn't know any lawyers. I didn't interact with any. It wasn't something that seemed in reach until as I got a little bit older, and I was actually already in college and I was studying business and actually studying nursing, then I switched to business. That's another story. But I began to develop relationships with people that were going to law school, coming out of law school, lawyers and so forth. And that dream became a little bit more real to me. I do recall one time I got into a car accident, and this guy who my car impacted, he had no license, no driver's license, or it was expired. The wrong license plate on the car, no insurance, and he got the ticket for crossing the double yellow line and hitting my vehicle. So about almost 2 years later, before the statute of limitations would have run out, he sued me. And I was just astonished that this person who was so wrong would find it in his heart to sue me. So I went to court with my mother, just my mother and myself. And I defended the case the best I could. And the judge threw the case out. As we're leaving, we end up being in the same elevator as the gentleman's lawyer. And on that trip down, he spent that whole elevator ride just complimenting me and encouraging me to go to law school. At that point, I was in college, and that's kind of what that seed that really reintroduced that thought into my mind. So a friend of mine and I, we both had that dream. We said, hey, let's just go take the LSAT and let's do it. And here we are.
Fantastic. This is a great story because this is the power of the dream. Determination, because you needed to go like above what you were seeing, and also like this intervention of like key people sometimes, like defining moment in our life, a word of life that is going like to ignite the dream again. And what is great, so you had a dream, you made your dream a reality because you went to law school, you became a lawyer, but as you were mentioning, you're currently not practicing as a lawyer. And what is interesting is between your start as a lawyer and your current role, in the middle, you had your own practice and also you worked for the government. So really, you've been building a diverse portfolio of career, which is going to become the new trend in the future. But when you were making those drastic moves, this is kind of unusual because some decades ago, generally we were like in one lane and spending like 30, 40 years in the same lane and sometimes the same company. Right. So what did you learn throughout those career transition, working for a firm, then building your own practice, then transitioning to the government, and now working for a large corporation?
Yeah, that's a good question. What did I learn? So I think that one thing I tell people is always to be open for the unknown, right? When I went to law school, all I had in my memory bank was watching old Perry Mason movies and Matlock and a little bit of the more modern LA Law, those types of shows. And in my mind, lawyer meant courtroom litigator. Right, so that's when I went to law school. I wanted to be in a courtroom, advocate in front of a judge or jury, and that's what lawyering was to me. When I got to law school, I realized that there were so many other areas of law or areas of business and just life in which lawyers were pivotal, in corporate transactions, real estate, tax law. You know, really opened up my mind to the options that were there. At any rate, I did go into a litigation practice and in a larger firm, and it was very good in most respects in terms of being able to learn the law and learn how to practice law effectively. But I realized that at some point it was a little tough, right? That to graduate from, and I graduated, use that term loosely, but to progress in your career in that environment from being an associate to a partner, it was definitely challenging in terms of developing relationships with the right individuals to be able to bring in a huge insurance company as your client or to bring in a huge gas company as your client. So about four and a half years in, I decided to open up my own practice and did that for a while. My wife is from Miami as well. We just had a couple of kids. And around that time, she wanted to, we made a decision. We made a mutual decision to move back to Florida to be closer to family and so forth. During that transition, one of my friends, long-term friends in sixth grade, he became a state representative in the North Miami area. And Governor Crist at the time was appointing him to the Public Service Commission, which regulates utilities, electric, water, gas utilities throughout the state of Florida. He heard I was moving back to South Florida and he asked me to join him in Tallahassee as essentially his chief of staff when he reached there. I had no idea what he was talking about. I literally had to Google Public Service Commission just as we were talking, just so I can get a sense of what that was. And I thought it would be a great opportunity to kind of reintroduce myself to Florida as an adult and a professional status and so forth. And I decided I would, you know, work in Tallahassee for about a year and then make my way back down to South Florida. About 7 years later, I found myself leaving Tallahassee and coming to work for FPL. You know, if you had asked me when I started law school, if I would envision myself doing what I'm doing now, I would have probably laughed or maybe thought of it as a failure, right? Because it's not what I went to school for. It's not what I saw my life or saw my professional life proceeding towards. But again, that concept of being open is, as you mentioned, we're in a changing society. Although here at FPL, there are tons of people that have worked here 30, 40 years, but even working here 30, 40 years, many of them are not doing the same thing where they started, you know, when they first came in. You could have come in as a lineman and you are now leading a team of people and just the development of new ideas and products and services. My boss, she's an engineer and by trade, and that's what she came in as. But now she's in external affairs and doing something completely different. And if you're open to change, you're open to move, you're open to do different things, I think it presents you with more opportunities to grow your career, challenge yourself, and to just make yourself a more well-rounded professional. So that's what I hold on to. My wife and I always sit down and list pros and cons, and we make these decisions together. And so far, it's been great. I wouldn't trade anything for the world.
Fantastic. And as you're mentioning, for this reason, like your career path at this moment will be quite common in the future, because in this new world, what I call like the never normal age, because I don't think that we will get a new normal. It's like never normal. This open to new opportunities, adaptability, because it's one thing like to see the opportunity, but then you need to pursue it. Because that will require a growth mindset, coming out of your comfort zones are really going like keys to really future-proof and thrive thrive in your career in the future. So thanks a lot for sharing like those key points in your path. And as you were mentioning, yes, you're building a successful career, and I'm sure that in the future you will get exciting new chapters. And for your role, you mentioned in the first question that you are quite involved in the business community, in some nonprofit, but you are involved not only in your role as external affairs manager, but also personal side.
Yes.
Because we've also mentioned in the second question that you're not coming from a wealthy family or family of lawyers. Right. So really, you're an example, you're an inspiration for diverse talent who are still not coming from those kind of background. So I would love to learn more on how you are walking the talk and shaping a better future for a young group of students who are growing, like you were growing up some decades ago, so they could also build their dream career.
Sure. You're absolutely right. Even before getting involved here, my job at FPL, I knew once I was moving back to South Florida that there were certain things I wanted to accomplish in terms of along the lines of what you're talking about. So currently I'm the chairman of the board for Miami Union at Venice Academy. It's my actual school. I went to a small private church school in North Miami right now. And my kids attend there as well. And that school is made up of primarily many young people who come from families that are financially challenged. And it's in a community that could use more resources and so forth. So I knew that when I wanted to go back in terms of being in a leadership position at that school, I wanted to put my money where my mouth is, so to speak, and really try to make an impact. So, you know, the school has only had 12th grade graduates since 1989. So we don't have a huge alumni network to pull from. So what we're trying to do there and what we are doing every day is, as they say, punching above our weight in terms of pretty much 100% graduation rate that, you know, these kids go to school. We're starting a robotics program there that from elementary and moving on up, hopefully we'll get to high school portion very soon. We have a strong arts program, great choir, great music program. One of my more recent graduates from there, she went on to get her doctorate from University of Miami and is currently in teaching vocal performance as well as singing in Broadway plays in New York. So we're very proud of her. The gentleman who I mentioned to you before, he was actually, you know, his name is Ronald Brise. We were in class together from sixth grade through 12th grade at that school. And, you know, just to see him coming from a situation where English was his third language that he learned after Spanish and Haitian Creole to ascend to one of the highest positions here in the state of Florida, you know, to the point where when Barack Obama was president, his office would call Brise and ask him, you know, I'm coming to Florida, who should I meet as I prepare for my second election cycle there. So, you know, when I consider that and I consider the size of that school and just the potential that it has there, I'm all in, you know, go to meetings there and so forth all the time and really just trying to leverage everything I can to pour into not just the school, but those kids and show them that where you are, the very seats you sat in, maybe not the same seats, hopefully they've changed actual desks since I was there 30 years ago, but you know what I mean? And those same seats that you sat in, I'll show you how you can get from where you are to where you want to be. People think, look at me, oh, you're a lawyer, you do this. No, you can get the heights way beyond what I've done. That's the goal, to get them to reach their fullest potential.
And this is really amazing. For this reason, I wanted like to know more so you could share with the audience, because at this moment, we are talking a lot about diversity, closing the diverse leadership gap, having like more opportunity for diverse talent. But this really require action at all the levels, right? And the government, also schools and corporation, and starting what you are doing and with shaping like the minds and giving like the tools to young, to children. So really congratulations, and also like walking the talk, because you are placing your kids in the same school you've attended. Yeah. And we were mentioning in the previous question, the changes, like everything is changing fast. We see what we saw, what is happening with the pandemic. And for this video in the podcast, we talked about the future trends. And one of the main trends at this moment is artificial intelligence, which is disrupting every single industry, and the legal field is not spared. So my question at this moment at FPL, are you already embracing AI? And also on the legal field, how do you see the impact of AI in the next decade?
Sure. I remember the movie Terminator, right? And Arnold Schwarzenegger came back from the future and the computers with this artificial intelligence that had taken over the world and were killing all the humans. So, you know, growing up, AI had a negative impression on me because it just seemed as if, you know, we don't want too much AI because they have an adverse impact on us as humans. You know, and even in, I think, in choosing professions and so forth, sometimes people do. I certainly, back in the day, and I would imagine even now to some extent, people are trying to think about getting into careers where it won't be impacted by AI, right? Because I don't want my job to be taken by a computer. But AI is definitely used to make things better right now. Here at FPL, we use AI predictive technology to predict when outages may occur, right? So we have 100 years of data, and you know, when certain factors are in play and you know different things are happening, we can predict now when an outage may occur and prevent it, right? So if an outage may occur on this line coming to this area, we may switch power and bring power from another feeder over into this area because we know that line is going to drop out based on history. So, you know, for us to reach almost 100% of reliability, it's part of that is certainly due to AI. You know, more broadly from a legal perspective, definitely I cannot envision, watch this document or this podcast end up on a documentary in the future. So they're going to say, man, look how dumb this guy was. He didn't see it. I don't see, it's hard for me to predict, or hard for me to see, you know, AI being presenting a passionate argument in front of a jury, right, in front of a judge, and doing certain things that I believe we will always have humans for. But there are certain things that AI is already impacting the legal community. When you get a new case, particularly in a larger firm, you have to do something called conflicts checking. We want to make sure that if we're going to represent company A versus company B, that we have not represented company B, or we're not currently representing company B in another matter. So we have to make sure that there aren't any conflicts. When I was practicing law there, that was something that either a junior attorney or even a legal assistant would do, and they'd have to, it's a very manual process. As I read and keep up with the legal community, that is being taken over more and more by AI capabilities. Even basic research, basic initial legal research is being conducted by through AI-enabled technology. I'd even go a step beyond that. If you have a practice or business in which that produces documents of a legal nature where you may just have to change a name, change an address, change a legal description, instead of paying a new attorney in these larger firms, you come out as a first year attorney, they're charging $300 an hour for that. That is being more and more taken over by this AI technology and so forth. So, you know, with that, I don't think it's scary because I think it frees up that young attorney to do something that's more challenging and it will really help them to grow. And it saves the customer some money there, not having to pay significant fees for something that's pretty simple and straightforward to do. So AI is touching, I think, every part of society, whether we see it or whether we're aware of it or not.
Thanks, Baldwin, for your insight. And we're coming almost to a close of this interview, and to close, I love to go to like a dreaming question. So I will ask you, if you could have a superpower, which superpower would you pick?
Superpowers. If I was younger, I probably would have asked for like flying or super strength or something like that. But now in my wise old age, I'm reading a book right now, actually listening to it, Audible, Will Smith's autobiography.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's really good. And one of the things, a couple of times in the books, he mentions a couple of things that he said to people in his life that he loved that he wished he could have taken back, right? Because it even though, you know, in his youthful, immature mind, he said what was on his heart, but it was very hurtful to whoever was receiving it. You know, he wishes he could have taken that back. I don't necessarily like to live a life of regret per se, because I think you learn from these things and it makes you better. But if I had a superpower, I'd probably say going back in time, right? Time travel, because perhaps I'd make a couple of decisions differently. I try not to mess up the space-time equilibrium, but I would probably do a couple of things differently. But maybe the most important would be I'd make sure I'd invest in Bitcoin and Amazon. I probably would. But, you know, I think in retrospect, you live and you learn, and you're the same person you are when you're 47 as you were when you were 27, then you really haven't shown any growth, right? So I'd probably take a couple of things back that I've said or done, and but I think that's probably what I would, which superpower I would grasp onto.
Thank you very much, Baldwin, for sharing your wisdom, your heart. Also, run like your passion for the next generation, your career knowledge and nuggets to build this thriving career in a world that is now going even to be like faster and faster. And thanks for taking the time in your busy agenda to stop by Glassmakers Cafe and having this conversation with us today.
Cindy, thank you so much for the opportunity. I look forward to seeing you again and continuing to watch and listen to your podcast.
Thank you. And to the audience, thanks again for joining us today. And I'm waiting for you next week for another encounter at Glassbreakers Cafe. If you enjoyed today's episode of Glassbreakers Cafe, please subscribe and share with your friends on social media. Also, be sure to follow me, your host, Cindy Mongenet, on LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. If there is any special guest or special topic you would like us to address, please drop me a note at cindy@newskiesnation.com. Thanks a lot for joining us today. And remember, no one can predict the future, but we still need to prepare for it. See you next week.